Bobby Rivers, alone in a world that doesn't want him. We can rebuild him, make him better than he was before. Better, stronger, blacker. Mocha.
And the Oscar goes to, well, another gay Super Bowl Sunday has come and gone. The Oscars have been given out, and Lord knows that Keith Price and I are going to give out without comments on the show. This is Bobby Rivers with Mocha. Mocha stands for Man of a Certain Hue, H-U-E, and Age. Yes, we have AARP cards, we're black, and we're just going to keep talking the way we want to.
Because I'm tired of trying to change.
You know, for real. And can I say something? I am so glad, because you know I've been a fan of the Scare Bear, Guillermo del Toro.
Yes.
I've been a fan of his for such a long time, and I was thrilled that he got Oscars last night at the Academy Awards. And, you know, and I'm mad at some of these, I'm going to say it, Caucasian film critics who do not get that his fantasy, The Shape of Water, is a resistance tale. He's taking on immigration and also taking on racism in America.
Sexism. Like, don't start with misogyny. Me.
Everything. And then
homophobia. He hit everybody.
He hit everybody. And then that mute woman is getting it on with a merman. He's like a big fish. And then I'm thinking, did you see the body on that amphibian?
Hello, how you doing? And clearly with the secret pocket.
Oh, hello? Well, let me just say this. If I had been the Sally Hawkins character, I would have gone Lily von Stoop on that sea creature. That sea creature would have said to me, please, baby, I am not from Havana.
Is it true how they say you fish are gifted?
It's true.
It's true. Oh, Sally Hawkins, shout out, girl. Good performance.
Shout out, good for you. And congratulations on getting that nomination. If you want to rent a video, she should have been a Best Actress nominee for a movie she made about 10 years ago called Happy Go Lucky.
Yes.
Where she is an optimist who cannot be moved from her viewpoint of optimism, even in the face of utter anger, played by Eddie Marsan, who was wonderful in the role of the driver's ed teacher who was about to kill himself after he kills her. he gets that angry in the front seat.
Fabulous.
fabulous.
So what did you think? What? Now tell me.
You know, okay, first
we
of all.
We have a whole lot to talk about.
I liked the show. Yes. I did. The only thing one of the main things, I knew it was going to be a difficult show to do because of the social gravity that we've had lately. Because you think of all the things that were mentioned by Jimmy Kimmel that were affected by Hollywood. You had that orange thing in the White House calling Africa a shithole country. And then look at how the Africans have been so proud to watch, to see the movie Black Panther.
I'm sure. But,
yeah.
$700 million money. I don't know where that money coming from because we ain't spend that much money to see it. Hello.
Right. So
it's coming from somewhere.
That movie came out at a perfect time. Now, that's on the entertainment side. Then we had the Harvey Weinstein scandal, the Kevin Spacey scandal, sexual harassment, Time's Up, Me Too. Then we had Never Again from the Parkland shooting tragedy at the high school in Florida. Mm-hmm. And that was a lot to try to, how do we honor this? How do we mention this? And then go on and hand out awards, for this, the festive occasion called the Academy Awards. And I thought that Kimmel did a pretty good job with it. People are always going, people watch the Oscars to hate the show.
Of course.
Well, you get on social media, and everybody is always complaining, well, the show's too long. And I'm thinking, oh, yeah, the Oscars are too long, but you stay with the Super Bowl for 6 hours.
Hey, hey, you don't come for that with that halftime stuff, okay? You better not be talking about it like that, because
no, I'm all about the Super Bowl halftime show. But the whole, but you know, they start like early in the morning.
Yeah,
and then this past Super Bowl, the Super Bowl of this year, mm-hmm. when they, I visited my sister that day. I boarded the plane in Newark when the game had just started. When I landed in Minneapolis and she came to get me, the game was still on. And I'm thinking, yeah, but you complain if you have to look at Meryl Streep in the front row of the Oscars for like 2.5 hours.
Looking fabulous and being regaled by everyone. Loved it.
Love it. Love it. I was happy with the show. The only thing, there weren't a lot of surprises. Like, you know, when right. you and I were kids, we just had the Oscars. But now today, with the way TV is, and then, you know, we've also got cable, the Oscars are not a community event because people watch, they watch stuff they later. Watch they don't to. Even, we're not watching everything at the same time as it happens. Also, now we've got, now we see the Screen Actors Guild Awards. You know, before those were televised. We, you know, the Golden Globes are on now. And now we also get the BAFTA Awards, which are the British Oscars. So this year, when they announced the big winners in the acting categories, we had already seen them give acceptance speeches on other shows.
Right. But those are also like the preamble to the big night. So if, you know, if someone exactly. gets a sweep, it's kind of a drag. But like, it was kind of nice because not everybody, it wasn't a full sweep.
You're exactly right. They really divvied it out. And let me see. Allison Janney pulled off a Cloris Leachman.
Wasn't she fabulous?
She was. She was. And you think of, she's been doing this a long time. She can look at the audience and go, oh, Meryl, I played your lover in The Hours. Mm-hmm. Oh, Viola, I was mm-hmm. with you in The Help. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Emma Stone, yeah, I was with you in The Help, too. I mean, she's been doing this a long time. And what? And, go on.
I was going to say, and she's got, you know what? It was interesting when they did her after she was, you know, called up, and you know how they do that little extra announcement, you know, Allison Janney has, you know, gone. Yeah. This is her first nomination and the first win. Da, da, da. And it was like, and at no point did they mention the fact that she has like 5 Emmy Awards, doesn't she?
That, you know, that was exactly.
And then like Emmy Awards that she won from 2 different shows.
The point that I made when I said she pulled off the Cloris Leachman, says Cloris Leachman played an unhappy wife in the drama The Last Picture Show. That was like 1971.
Yep.
And Cloris Leachman won Best Supporting Actress and then went back to work playing a wife in a CBS sitcom called The Mary Tyler Moore Show.
That's it.
Allison Janney works on a CBS sitcom where she's playing a funny mom. Mm-hmm. And that is the name of the character. Then she went and made a movie and played the other side of the character coin. She was a monster mom in I, Tonya, got the Oscar for Best Supporting Actress.
And, you know, today got to go to work on the set.
And today got to go. Today got to go.
You know, knock on wood, thank God, right?
Oh, and it really, thank God. And I cheer. I was, oh, man, I was about to cry when Jordan Peele's name was announced
yes.
as winner for Best Original Screenplay.
Yes.
So happy. I was watching the red carpet show on ABC leading into the Oscars.
Uh-huh.
So there was, I watched the coverage with Chris Connolly and ABC. Yes. Okay. And ABC news anchor Paula Faris.
Sorry.
Okay.
Because I know it's going to upset you.
Two very, very nice white people. And, you know, I have mentioned before that Chris never mentioned that Jordan Peele pulled off something that in 1942 had been pulled off by Citizen Kane and the filmmaker of Citizen Kane, Orson Welles, when he made that classic film.
What?
Okay, it was Orson Welles' first feature. He got Oscar nominations for Best Director. His Citizen Kane screenplay was up for Best Original Screenplay. The film was up for Best Picture. And it got a nomination for Best Actor because Orson was nominated for playing Citizen Kane.
That's right.
Jordan Peele, his first film, Get Out. He's nominated for Best Original Screenplay. He's nominated for Best Director. The film is nominated for Best Picture. And even though he wasn't in the movie, the film earned Oscar nomination for Best Actor, Daniel Kaluuya.
Yeah.
So Paula Faris, bless her heart, and I know she meant well, was she said, you know, this is like a premier project for Jordan, and it's his directorial film debut, and he's nominated for Best Director and Best Screenplay. Like, where do you go from there? And I'm thinking, well, Orson Welles went on to give us The Magnificent Ambersons, Touch of Evil, and Chimes at Midnight. I think Jordan's going to be fine.
She's already stopped his work. Like, this is as good as it's going to get for him. Like, lady,
what else?
Calm down with your faux excitement for the brother. You know what I'm saying?
Oh.
It's like, oh. And then again, we say this, and it's like, and in addition to the fact that we see Jordan Peele having this moment,
yes,
as the first black man, if I'm not mistaken, isn't like Greta Gerwig like one of the first women? Because
let me tell you, she is one of the few women
who's like
women, very few women who have directed a film that gets nominated for Best Picture are also nominated for Best Director.
And for screenwriting.
And it's like, I've always wondered, okay, what the hell is that up with that? Because every time Mel Gibson directs a movie that gets a nomination for Best Picture, he's up for Best Director. So this was a breakthrough. Mm-hmm. This was women's history for Greta Gerwig.
Exactly.
Best Director nominee for Lady Bird, and the film's up for Best Picture. Yeah.
And then two of the actors up for Tony's himself, Oscars himself. So
yes.
So she's accomplished the same thing, and I'm sure that they didn't notice that either, did they?
No. Where do you go from there, Jordan?
It's called like, back to the set.
Like, is there a job opening at BET? And I'm sitting there in the living room by myself listening to this, and my head just blows up like those Martians who hear the music of Slim Whitman in Mars Attacks.
I can't with you. But going back to something that we have both said, that it's very interesting that Paula Faris is having this moment. Is it Paula Faris? Or Anna Faris is the actress. Paula Faris that's on the show with Allison Janney.
Right.
So Paula Faris is saying this, and her response is, well, what could possibly happen next? And it made me think, as soon as you said that, of the opportunity that they're already not about to give him his next film. You know what I'm saying? Like yes. He's done it. It's like, you know, you go on, you get all this national recognition. The New York Times is saying things about you, and all of this stuff is happening, and you can't get a second gig. They, you know, this guy, he's breaking box office things with the $5 million that the picture that makes $250 million. He's
it made
like,
million. You know, that was a bonanza at the box office. And did you know this? He shot the entire movie. He shot Get Out in 23 days.
Amazing. So again,
Paula Faris.
They're already cutting him off at the knees before he's even started his next project. Where do you go from there? Well, hopefully back to the drawing board with about 7 more ideas that now, since I got this damn award, y'all gonna listen to.
And Chris Connolly had no response. I was like, oh Lord, Chris. Will you? He needs to read my emails.
No,
Chris, can you just get?
No, honey, because they just mad. It'll just make them.
Oh
mad,
yeah, yeah, baby. Right. Yeah.
It just makes them mad because then, you know, you call them out if you find out they're using your material anyway. This is the thing. Again, here we are sitting here having this conversation, and I was watching a friend of mine on Facebook. His name is T. Oliver Reed. And, you know, you'll see me, if you follow me on Facebook or on the Twitter sometimes, I will retweet or share this video experience that he does like two or three times a week. And in it today he was saying, you know, he was talking about the Oscars and stuff, and then he said, But you know what I noticed? He said, I was looking at the red carpet, and he said, I was looking at that just sea of white people.
Oh, Lord.
And he goes, but wait. He goes, doing all of the press and stuff. He's like, where were the black folks? Where are the people of color on the red carpet having company? He said, I saw all these white people. And it was like, and I started laughing, and I had to send him a note. I said, that's kind of what we've been saying. Like, yeah, you know.
And then they're all talking about
diversity. And it, like, ain't not a black face in the conversation about diversity. But what I do love is how the world was basically trying to get away from Ryan Seacrest, but then still look cool.
Oh, God. That was like, we shouldn't laugh, but we're going to.
I've told you why I'm laughing. This is the reason why I'm going to laugh at him, and I'm going to laugh at Matt Lauer, and I'm going to laugh at I wouldn't necessarily laugh at Bill Cosby only because, you know, I do have some reverence for him. He is an old black man. He was a first. But yeah. he's still a terrible human being when all of this stuff allegedly that he has done
allegedly
has come true forth for wishing for all of these people. But, like, again, you know, these people, in the end, if this stuff is, this kind of behavior is happening and they're doing all this kind of stuff, they don't deserve the privilege to be able to stand in front of a Meryl Streep or stand in front of a Viola Davis or stand in front of a Christopher Walken or Christopher Plummer and have, you know, a civil conversation when they're like sitting there basically trying to finger bang every girl that walks by them. You know what I'm saying?
That's true.
You don't deserve that, especially when you're making a gajillion, million, trillion dollars. And you're not even aware of the fact of how privileged you are to have that kind of gig. You know what I'm saying? And I say that
privilege, and privilege just runs rampant on that red carpet.
Exactly.
Would you just mention, I was thinking the same thing. I went, wait a minute, where is the racial diversity in the red carpet coverage?
Well, I guess that's coming next.
They put Michael Strahan, bless his heart, in for that.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to laugh at you. I love him.
Okay.
Michael Strahan, please don't beat me up on the street because I do. I please swear to God. Because we, I am look, one of your big. I Mrs. swear I'm a Mrs. fan. Strahan, I swear to
Mr.
God.
Mr. Strahan, we like you a lot.
We do.
But however, they need to give you some veteran people of color to give you notes when you're on the red carpet. Okay, I'm just going to give
Robin
you an
Roberts?
Example.
Did I miss Robin
I like
Roberts?
Michael Strahan.
Did I miss Robin Roberts?
Robin Roberts was not there.
Because I'm like...
Robin Roberts was not there. I guess maybe, you know, she had another party to go to or something. Yeah. But she was not on the red carpet. And even though Laura Spencer was there, they didn't put her in the red carpet show. Okay? So they just Sarah Haynes, they still had to have a blonde.
Of course.
So they dragged Sarah Haynes from The View.
Uh-huh.
And then there was another woman. Now, with Michael Strahan.
And Paula Faris, right?
Paula Faris was for the early hours.
She does the weekend stuff.
And Chris Connolly just, maybe they went in to see the show.
Mm-hmm.
But then they were replaced by Sarah Haynes, and then Michael Strahan came out. And they need to just give Michael Strahan, because, you know, he's probably so busy with other stuff. And he probably doesn't follow film history like you and I do. For right. instance, he had Mahershala Ali. Oh.
I love him.
So he Mahershala Ali joins him, comes up for an interview, and Michael Strahan's question was, where do you keep your Oscar? Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, okay, if I had been the veteran person
producer,
of color.
Producer. On that segment with him.
I would have said, okay, Michael, Mahershala Ali is coming up. Mahershala Ali is one of the few black men who was in two movies nominated for Best Picture in the same year. Just like Sidney Poitier was in The Heat of the Night,
mm-hmm.
and Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, and both were Best Picture Oscar nominees, and in The Heat of the Night won, Mahershala Ali was in Hidden Figures, and Moonlight, and he won Best Supporting Actor, and Moonlight turned out to be the real winner for Best Picture.
You saw how Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway looked last night. Honey. They were like, yeah, we're not having it. And then when they pulled out the envelope, you could see on the envelope on the very front of it, it had like the actual title of what award was going to be given in big old gold letters.
The biggest? I've never seen font so big and
that
in
we
my
could
life.
Read it from TV. I was like, ooh, they're making sure that they don't f*** this one up.
If you were in a space shuttle, you could have said, hey, the Shape of Water one. Look.
The print's so big. So let's recap. Come on, let's recap. There was some really good ones. Like, I was very glad to see Sam Rockwell get that prize.
And you know what? And Sam Rockwell, let me tell you, I've been a Sam Rockwell fan for so long. Mm-hmm. And that was his first Oscar nomination, and he wins. And Sam Rockwell should have been nominated. This should have been, like, his latest Oscar nomination. You look at him in movies like Conviction that he did with Hilary Swank, Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, played Chuck Barris. In the movie Moon, the Academy gave all those Oscar nominations to The Martian with Matt Damon. They should have given the same amount of nominations to Moon, and Sam Rockwell is excellent in that film.
Yes, well,
and then he gets turned around and just break me up laughing in a movie like Galaxy Quest.
Yes. He's just, there's something about, I have like a kind of a total crush on him. I do. Like, he's like, you, he would get
too.
It. He would be like, how you doing? But it's because he's so funny.
And he'd call you the next day.
He looks like he would call you. He may not want to hang out with you after, but he'll at least call you to tell you that he's not going to hang out with you after.
You're right. Which is sweet. We can deal with that.
That's sweet. But I gotta say, though, I mean, he was in a good category. Like, everyone in that category was really fabulous. You know?
Yes.
I loved seeing Frances McDormand do what I knew she was gonna do, which was something spectacular.
Man.
And we must talk. You know, and shout out to, what's his name? Gary Oldman. Yeah.
Yes.
Allison Janney, girl, you know you worked us. But Frances McDormand. And how about the fact that it wasn't, two women announcing the best actress.
Oh, yes.
Did you notice that? I noticed that.
And
for
you know,
sure.
And you know why that came about. Casey Affleck had, some sexual misconduct drama. So he opted out of attending the ceremony, as did James Franco.
The bottom line is, when it's all said and done, it's like, I can't feel bad for you either.
Well, that's true. I was glad to see Joni.
I was like, yeah, she was cute. And I love the whole idea that she got whacked in the leg by Meryl Streep.
Meryl, I Tanya'd me. did I ever tell you about my experience, my up-close and personal experience with Frances McDormand? Okay, this goes back to the 1980s when I was on VH1. I get contacted by a top agency in New York City to come in for a meeting. So I get to this agency. I'm all prepared. And I'm sitting outside, and I go. They have me sit down, and they said, "Oh, sit down next to the woman right there." And I recognize this woman from the movie Mississippi Burning. It's Frances McDormand, and she's sitting there, with that. Ooh. Cool, serious face like she had last night about to accept the award. And it looked like she was running. Sometimes you can tell when an actor is running lines in his or her head.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Well, she looked like she might have been running lines in her head, and maybe she was going to read for something. So I didn't engage her in any chat because I said, I'm sitting right next to her, but give her space, right? And we're seated, and the agent's door is open, and he's on the phone. And it's like an old movie. He's like, I'm telling you, she's going to be big, 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 big. And Frances and I look at each other like, oh. So, and we're, of course, eavesdropping. He starts raving about this actress, saying, she's going to burn up the screens. She's nuclear hot. This is one of the best performances I have ever seen. Then it goes on, and we're like, listen, we're trying to find out, who is it? You've just got to see Madonna in Dick Tracy. Frances McDormand turned slowly to me and gave me the ultimate what the look. What the holy fuck?
Y'all better leave Breathless Mahoney alone, all right? You leave her alone because that was the right role for her. Okay.
I was so glad I did not have coffee in my mouth. I would have done the ultimate Danny Thomas spit take.
Y'all better leave Madonna alone. She is, she is an artist. Don't hate her. She can't help it if her acting skills are not that of a Frances McDormand or Meryl Streep, yet she still seems to get these really exciting parts. You leave her alone.
Maybe And I wound up signing with the agent, and he became my first ex-agent.
In a long line of ex-agents.
God, he kept sending me out. He sent me out to play a pimp, and I'm like, what?
I can't do anything with this. I can't.
Who's a pimp? Who's in my stable? Nathan Lane and Richard Simmons?
Two people you want a pimp slap just on GP. Although Nathan Lane, it will be returning to Broadway in the role of Roy Cohn in Angels in America. Angels I'm sure he's going to be absolutely amazing.
I left. You know, I was still on VH1. I was still doing the talk show. I'm getting appearances on CBS Late Night, and he's submitting me to play a killer thug in Weekend at Bernie's Part 2. And I went, you know, I just...
But we're in such a different place now, Babalo. Such a different place. Because we have to also, let's look at the Oscars again and also remember, we're going to stay on. No, because we're going to stay on.
These are the moments that I treasure. When you bring me back to the light. when you it's treat dark me like there. Carol Ann and Poltergeist.
It's dark down there, Bobby. Don't do it, Bobby. Don't trade places where I've been, Bobby. Want to sing, but can't. Gotta have it beat out you. And then I saw you over there, Miss Seeley.
Because you will always do that. You pull me back and you give me that Sophia hold now moment.
It's all right. You know, it will come in time. It is going to come in time. But again, getting back to what we were talking about with the Oscars this year, which was something that I thought was a very subtle thing in that I feel like Greta Gerwig was the only person that was like an honor to be nominated.
Oh, man, she was so gracious.
But it was sort of like a nice division of people getting prizes in places that people wanted to see them get prizes, for sure. Yes. And at the same time, everybody got something. And you know what happened?
You're right. You're so right.
And you know what happened? Nothing. Look at that. We had a wonderful Oscars presentation. You know, we had to remind the boys to be respectful of the ladies. You know what I'm saying? We have all of these executives that are sitting in the room. That thing that Frances McDormand did, you see all of those women that do all of those different things standing up. You know, that is a very significant thing to look at.
That was major.
You know?
And I love the fact that she mentioned the inclusion writer. What it does is it really underscores the point that Cheryl Boone Isaacs, former president of the Academy, the first black woman to be president of the Academy, it really underscores all the changes she was trying to make with diversity and inclusion. The inclusion rider is basically a contract that says you will give equal opportunity in front of and behind the cameras to women and all people of color. Yeah. And when you think about it, that the diversity issue was so severe that people had to draw up a contract and said, y'all need to get some Asian Americans, some Latinos, and some black folks up in here. And what about these women who can be cinematographers, editors, and makeup artists?
Yeah.
That is serious.
That's very serious.
So that's what an inclusion writer is. It's for inclusion. It's for diversity.
And what it's so sad is that it's a very, very kind of equal opportunity creator. Like it has, because it has to kind of open it up. And so like if there are female electricians out there working, there should be some, there's, you know, they should be able to be getting work on the sets and not being and told that they can't do it because they're women. Like, you know, and that's exactly. already a small number. I think like on in the world of theater here in Broadway, I believe there's like maybe three women that are like theatrical stage electricians. Three. You know, and two of them are like sisters or something like that. I mean, you know, something ridiculous like that. Like, but it's a very small, small number in a sea of where men and a lot of times mostly white men are dominant. And so it's kind of interesting because
and they're the ones who we need the inclusion writer for, because right. it's usually traditionally in my is well, I'll just speaking personally, in my career, if I was able to you know, break through that diversity wall, it was with the help of a woman or some women. It was a woman who got me into audition, and I booked the roles of a couple of bit parts on The Sopranos. It was a women casting directors who were telling agents, you need to see this guy. He auditioned for me, and he's really good. And then it was the white male agents who said, oh, I'm not interested in having a meeting with him. We have needed these inclusion writers, and we didn't even know that they existed.
Well, I mean, and at the same time, too, it's sort of like it goes back to what we've said. This is something that my friend T. Oliver Reed was saying that I was going to say earlier, too, about this inclusion writer. What it does now is that the people that are really like in power, that means the Meryl Streeps, the Oprah Winfreys, the Tyler Perrys, the Jordan Peeles, now that he's gotten a little weight taste of some cuteness right now, the Greta Gerwigs, yeah. which, of course, I'm sure she's going to be a big advocate of, like... You think about Greta Gerwig's the casting when she put what the guy that plays the priest in that
the
show.
Priest, yeah, Stephen, Lord,
but a random choice, and I loved how...
random choice, and we mentioned this earlier. I love the choice because the actor who played the priest, who is sort of the head of the high school drama department, is black. I'm Catholic, and I rarely see the black Catholic experience represented on screen. I went, he was perfect. He was perfect to play that part.
And the thing
And
I was going to say, and the thing is that she, by merely choosing, casting him in that role, she could have just chosen because she thought it would have been he's a funny looking kind of energy. Cause you know, he's a little on the light skin to the tip with freckles. And maybe that's a visual thing that she thought would be really great. And not even realizing the significance of of putting him in that role could mean for someone like you watching that film. You know what I'm saying? But it's like, it's going to always seemingly for me, it's the conversation is, it's always going to take people who are outside of the marginalized group that's trying to get into someplace. It's going to be right. their hand that's going to help us get into those rooms where we were marginalized. And so
I just want to tell the folks that the actor's name is Stephen McKinley Henderson.
Yes.
And he was in Fences. He was in Spielberg's Lincoln. And did you see him on stage with Laurie Metcalf?
No, I missed him. And he was also in a couple of other really great stage plays that he's in. I mean, he's got a wonderful, interesting, working kind of character actor career with some good stage meat behind him. And, you know, but like I said, though, I mean, what a different casting opportunity for her to do with him. I also loved when, after they did the Merrily We Roll Along, and he was sitting there all kind of bummed out. He was like, they just didn't get it.
It was just wonderful. It was just wonderful.
You know, and then...
favorite things about Lady Bird.
And then you see things like Call Me By Your Name. And, okay, so here's my, so this is a little bit of my stand-up moment that I used the other day, but this is the thing. So I'm watching Call Me By Your Name, right? And I'm like, oh my God, that is just so beautiful. His first love is this beautiful hunk of man, Armie Hammer, and they're in this wonderful south of wherever the hell it was, Italy, and it was just so gorgeous, yeah. and they were eating the wine and riding around on the bikes, and everything was so fabulous, and, you know, and then he goes off, and then it's love is done, and then there he is crying at the end into the fire, and I was just sitting there thinking to myself afterwards, because this is when the old gay guy kicked in.
Oh, God, Lord.
And went, Oh my God. So Armie Hammer was your first time ever having a love relationship. You know what? You better get over yourself, young man. It's like you sitting there crying. Don't even, I can't even remember what the first guy was like. And you sitting here crying over your hunk of man. You know what? You got off easy, bitch. It's like looking at him. It's like, I wanted to go into that scene and just slap him and go, get over it. You realize how lucky you were?
Girl, can I tell you that?
I mean, and again,
I know beautiful, how you feel.
Beautiful film. Gorgeous film. The acting was delightful. Everything was wonderful.
I remember being in college. And I remember the first guy that, and he did. He looked like somebody famous.
You know?
He looked like Larry of the Three Stooges. So this dude crying. Actually, you had Armie Hammer.
You had Armie Hammer. I mean, I know why you're crying. It totally makes sense why you're crying. I get it. I would be boohooing too if I knew I couldn't get him again.
I was with one of the Three Stooges.
But, you know, there's also the other component to this whole story that, again, as we're now deconstructing, Call Me By Your Name. Like, you had a fabulous parents. Your parents were fabulous. They knew. They helped you out. They basically pimped you out with the cute guy. Like, they hooked you up. Like, and then dad giving you that wonderful speech at the end. Like they took care of you. You better, like, what you sitting there crying for?
Okay.
You better stop crying. Because
I, and this is the truth. Because I was thinking of you. I was thinking of you when this happened. Because I saw that scene. And that scene, Michael Stuhlbarg, who I was hoping was going to get an Oscar nomination for Best Supporting Actor for playing the loving dad in Call Me By Your Name. Wait. And I'm thinking, you know what? If my dad had been like that, so much would have been different.
My God.
I was thinking, oh, God. I thought back to... I admit it. I'm in the bathroom. I'm not even 12. I had one of mom's scarves holding in my hand. I didn't realize that the bathroom door, the bathroom window was open, and dad had been working in the backyard and he was peeking at me. And I'm looking at myself in the mirror, dramatic expression on my face, holding my scarf, and had turned and looked at the mirror and said, don't you touch me. You tell your American buddy. I was doing Rita Moreno in West Side Story.
Who, by the way, last night in her dress that she wore the night she won. But that's a side story. Go, baby.
Tony Parabatone and shot her. If one of you was dying in the street, I'm doing the whole scene. And dad was not pleased.
So, again, when I look at Call Me By Your Name, as I got to the ending of the movie, I just did want to just jump into the screen and just go, do you know how easy you've had it? Do you know?
Oh.
You damn kids don't understand. And I knew that was
You're
the wrong.
Lucky.
It was a totally wrong response to have, but that's where I went.
I know, because he was. I said, "Look, your dad gave you a hug. My dad just about snatched me ball headed for thinking I was Rita Moreno
and Maggie the Cat." So you see,
and this was after the Maggie the Cat.
You know, so again, reassessing some of the big nominees, that was one that I walked away feeling like, wow. I shouldn't be quite as angry as I am now. I mean, I get it. Love, love, love. First love, blah, blah, blah. Break your heart. And it's like, but then it was like, I wanted to also go up to him and hug him and go, honey, you're going to be crying like this at least five good, maybe even seven good times. You're going to have this cry. How old are you again? 17? Oh, yeah. Yeah, baby. Just let it out, honey. Just let it all out.
Wait till you're our age, and we're hitting you with lines like, "Gee, you're even younger than I was when I started stripping." Something wrong with stripping?
Dude, But I do. I wanted to, like, at one point I wanted to smack him around, and then on the other hand I wanted to walk up behind him and just give him the big hug and then just start moaning like an old black woman in church. It's gonna be all right.
It's gonna be all right.
You're gonna find love again. Ain't gonna break your heart again, too, girl. Yeah. This is what they make you do, Bobby. This is what they make me do.
This is what they do. Because, you know, you tell that kid, you say, yeah, just wait till you get older. Because it was last year, someone asked me, said, what is the sexiest thing a man can do to you? And I said, show up. You know?
Sometimes it takes so little. But you see, Bobby, this is how you end up with the Andrew Cannonans. This is how they get us. You see what I'm saying? A kind word, a return phone call. The next thing you know.
An expensive gift that you re-gifted.
You know, maybe an occasional dinner. You know, sometimes it doesn't take a lot. And there the clothes are on the floor, and then he's murdered you. So, it happens. It happens. Yeah. But that's how they start. Because you know what I've been doing now, and I know that we're far away now from the Oscars, but let's just be honest.
We will get back to the Oscars.
Well, you know, what more are we going to say? It was very nice. It was very calm.
You know what? You finish this, and then I just have to put in another word for a couple of legends who look wonderful Okay, so finish that.
But, like, I've been watching a lot of Snapped lately on Oxygen. Now, I know you would say, Keith, why do you do that? Why would you let that stuff enter your brain?
And I'm going to say that now. Keith, why would you do that? Why would you let that stuff into your... Why?
Because it's a very good social experiment. It's been a great social study. One of the things I walked away with is that I learned that I'm really kind of glad that I'm gay. Because so far, every one of those stories is like some mad woman... who was with this man, and then something happened, and then she just decided, he needs to die. And then it's like, wow, is that how this thing goes? It's like, I mean, I've done some scandalous thing for a man, but murder? Wow. So I pull myself back, and I fill myself with that because it makes me feel better.
That's the, because we, you know what? In real life, we weren't as lucky. Call me by your name. You summed it up perfectly.
Yeah.
Me at that same age, is not just dad, mom could not really deal with me being gay. And I was like, you know what? You now have a piano in the living room because I was on a game show, pressed a buzzer, and said, the answer is Ann Miller. What is the problem?
And that was before Sugar Babies.
Way before Sugar Babies.
Just say it for the Broadway people if you're tuning in. I just... But the Oscars. Legendary Rita Moreno styling and profiling in the outfit that she wore back in 1961, the year she won.
She looked fabulous. And the thing is, she spoke so well. She looked wonderful. The same, and she's 86.
86 and looked snatched.
And Eva Marie Saint, who said, I just realized I'm older than the Oscar. She's 93. She was wonderful.
I love it. So, you know, again, but some wonderful, Eva Marie Saint, there's some living history. And how about also the three women? Salma Hayek. Annabella Sciorra. And who was the other woman? That wasn't Paz de la Huerta.
Ashley Judd.
Those three, were the three of them together?
Yes.
Having their Witches of Eastwick, we're going to get you Harvey Weinstein stance going on. It was cute.
That was very strong. You know, Annabelle, she's a friend of your friend, Anthony DeVito.
Yes. You know, yes. What's so funny? I wanted to ask her, girl, did you not tell your big brother or cousin or somebody to go over there and break a kneecap or something? Because
her career was going so well.
Yeah.
And, you know, she was in one of the best episodes of The Sopranos.
Yeah.
You know, when she hit Tony in the head with a steak, and then he ate the steak because that's how Tony was. And your career then halted because of this toxic masculinity nonsense.
No, I mean, you know, Salma Hayek up there getting her moment. I'm like, it's kind of nice to see people getting comeuppance in this moment, because I think that it is a light that I'm so glad has been shown onto this stuff. I hope that people really do move forward and try to do this.
Now that they know about all of this, now they know about things like the inclusion writers, I hope I don't come off like a cockeyed optimist, but I think that this would also help you and me try to get, you know, ourselves back into the paid workforce.
At least to be seen as someone who can either have conversations when it comes to this kind of work, or at least, you know, I'm all up for a sassy gay cross on a good sitcom. I have no problems being that gay guy.
Me too.
Pride is not
but,
that deep.
But for both, I say me too, and I say time's up. Because now, you know, I just don't have time for this, you know, body image nonsense. Well, you're a little bit too thick, or ageism, or whatever. It's like, you know what? No.
Once people start seeing the only color that really matters in that industry, which is green, once they start seeing green, then they start forgetting about the colors of everybody else. Like,
that's true.
You know? It's like Denzel. When you say Denzel, that means money, box office seats. That means people will go see him in the theater.
But now it's going to be like when you say Chadwick Boseman, ka-ching. Yeah.
Well, you hope that's what's going to happen.
Hopefully. And the other part of that is that whole thing also affected, and I know people will think, why does Bobby keep talking about the need for black movie hosts or movie critics? It's because we know what the filmmakers of color are going through. And as people like me, people like you, we want to use our entertainment reporter talents and skills to bring light to their situation if we can get through. But we've been sort of marginalized too, as you see by the lack of color on the red carpet. So, and that's been the way it is.
And Ryan Seacrest.
Right. And I'm not going to say, I'm not mentioning his name right now to throw shade, but if I was in a position like Al Roker, where I was like the beloved regular on a highly rated network morning show, I would be using my spotlight and turning it over to some of this up and coming talent of color that was having trouble breaking through the diversity wall. Just, you know, because I'm very passionate about diversity and inclusion, and I wanted to use my talents to help as much as I could.
Right. But you see, sometimes though, when people get into those particular positions and they get those opportunities, the personal survival becomes greater than the survival overall for everyone. You know what I'm saying? Like, And on one hand, we can say that's a terrible thing, seeing as we're basically on the outside looking in. But then on the other hand, it's sort of like, I wonder how people don't know that when everyone works together, it's like there's enough for everybody. You know what I'm saying?
There is.
There's enough conversations to be had. It's like, I went to that press junket the other day that I did with Cheetah Rivera and BB Newworth, which of course is featured on my podcast and also on the featured BroadwayWorld.com podcast. There's a little blurb that I wrote with the interview, so you can go there. But sitting in that room to have that conversation with all of these women, it was me and one Latino guy who he's just now starting to do stuff for himself, kind of on camera, bringing his own things out there. But he, you know, for the longest time, it used to just be me and everybody else was white. Everybody else was white. Unless it was a press junket where like a Norm Lewis and a Ben Vereen or somebody would show up. And then other entities that have people of color will start to kind of filter into the room. And that's the only time that they're there. But then a lot of times they wind up missing the opportunities to talk to Bebe Neuwirth or getting to meet Christiane Knoll or figuring Donnell J. Foreman, who's this wonderful new kid. Like, you don't, because you don't know who he ain't Ben Vereen, some of these other agencies didn't come to say, hey, let's take note and highlight this brother. And so it's funny, funny for me, because I sit there now, and not only am I highlighting this brother, because Donnell J. Foreman is fabulous. You need to go see him on March 19th at Fine Science 54 Below, because you know why? This is what we're supposed to be doing too, you know?
Yes.
But you can see him. But then I also got to sit and kiki with Cheetah Rivera and Bebe Neuwirth and Christiane Knoll and Deborah Grace Winer, these fun, you know, like, but these are people that, you know, me being a person of color, not only am I getting to meet these people and talk to these people and learn more about them or expand my knowledge that I may have about all of those people, but I'm also bringing them to maybe a smaller audience of folks that may never have known who these folks were, because that black guy that they think is, like, you know, he's so silly, he's so crazy, he's so funny. But then when they say, oh my God, but I didn't know about Keala Settle. That's what someone said to me the other day. And I said, you know, I interviewed her like a year and a half ago, right before she actually left to go do the Greatest Showman. I interviewed her before then. And look at what she is accomplished now. But if you were listening to my podcast a year and a half ago, you'd have already known who she was. You see what I mean?
That's the kind of thing I love doing too. Exactly.
You know? Yeah.
And can I just give some love and respect to some, if you all listen to our podcast on a regular basis, you hear his voice. Mike Sargent.
Mike Sargent.
He does the riff, the takeoff on the $6 million man open, Bobby Rivers. Okay, so Mike Sargent is a great, big, brawny, lovable, heterosexual black man.
Exactly.
Who had a show on national cable. And this will underscore the point of diversity and why we need inclusion writers. So Michael Sargent is on radio in New York City. He's also an indie filmmaker and a film critic. So he had his own half-hour show that aired every weekend. It was a half-hour film review and interview show. And it's how Mike and I met.
Right.
On his show, Mike always had two guest critics. And he made sure that in each show, one of the critics was female. And he put on a lot of women of color who are film critics. And you know what? On network TV, you never see female film critics of color.
No.
Mike put them on his show. He gave a lot of attention to women directors and LGBT filmmakers. Mm-hmm. I contacted Caucasian people I know at New York City newspapers and at magazines and said, you know what, could you mention this show? This is really a groundbreaking show for a black man who was a film critic to have, because we haven't seen this on TV before. They never paid any attention to it. And I think if there had been some attention to it, this show would still be on. It was a groundbreaking show. And Mike Sargent was and is an example of the type of thing that we wanted to do. Mm-hmm. But like I said, we've been marginalized and we know what the filmmakers of color have been going through.
You know what's so funny, though, when you think about Mike Sargent, I always think maybe if he like just cold cocked somebody on the red carpet famous, then maybe people will pay attention to him. But then I was like, but then you go to the Terry Crews route, which is once you put your hand on some white man, your party's done. So, you know, he's kind of
the white man gets a raise.
Exactly. For being, you know, hurt and put upon. So I see him having issue. You know what I'm saying? Like it's like it's just so it's unfair. It is unfair. But again,
it is.
You know,
it's all in the same ball of what we're talking about. Yeah. Like somebody like Mike Sargent does not have an agent. Nope. He does not still have his half-hour film review interview show.
And nobody's looking to give him another one either. You know what I'm saying?
But then Paula Faris is on TV wondering, is Jordan Peele going to have a career after?
He's maxed out. He's maxed out. Can you believe that? You know what I'm saying? Like, he doesn't even get the opportunity. Like, instead of saying, I can't wait to see what he's going to have next after this. You know what I mean? The difference of that, that's just a difference. What She's like, how is he gonna survive after this? It's like, no. What is he gonna do next? God. Because if this is the level of brilliance you're getting now, imagine what's gonna happen when he's given freedom to really do his art the way he wants to. He's gonna get money to be able to do the art the correct way and doesn't have to primp and chinch himself out of good quality actors and pieces and sets.
Exactly.
Like when he's got that opportunity, imagine what he's gonna do. Look at what he did when he had nothing.
Just because I found it, because I had written it down. Paula Ferris said that Jordan Peele's Get Out was, quote, a pioneering moment. This was his debut film, too. So where do you go from there? Oh, God. He went on stage to the Oscars and accepted his Academy Award. That's one thing he did.
And then the second thing was he called his accountant to make sure all them checks that he's supposed to be getting got cleared. And then he and Chelsea probably went to Fatburger after the set because I think she's still pregnant. he's got things going on for Paul. Those are just the immediate things he's going to do.
And then on top of that, okay, because I was reading one of these magazines about the multi-million-dollar Hamptons estate that is up for sale, because I guess they're moved. They're, I don't know, but and who owned it? George Stephanopoulos.
Oh wow!
This is just read this like a week or two ago, but it was like an aerial shot. I went, damn! Look at that! It's an estate. It's a Hamptons estate.
Wow!
Did you see George on Good Morning America the morning after the Oscars?
No.
Okay. So, George, he was so proud of himself. The man is like, I'm sure he's like well into his, maybe he's in his 50s.
Yeah.
But he was so proud of himself. He said, I was watching. And it was the look on Robin Roberts and Michael Strahan's face as they just looked down was priceless. He said, I learned a new term I had never heard before, and I learned it from Tiffany Haddish. And Robin said, what? She really didn't know. He said, took a dookie? I just went, oh, Lord.
Can I just say?
Oh, Lord.
Can I just say that I love that little moment between her and Maya Rudolph? I loved. I loved. We took our shoes off. Shoot.
Yes. My pinky toe came off. And all my toes came off with George Stephanopoulos, who was beaming with pride. I learned a new term.
Took a dookie.
It's like, oh, Lord, George. Lord. Oh, Lord.
Didn't anybody?
You're a network news anchor. Keith and I are wondering if we have any leftover government cheese that we can use to make fondue. You make millions. I learned a new phrase.
Take a dookie.
Took a dookie.
<I'm> sorry.
Oh.
This is why we can't have nice things. Oh, you gotta watch what you say in front of the children.
And if we were two white guys, somebody would be buying this show right now and try to turn it into a TV series.
Well, I'm telling you, all we need, Bobby, is one of our fabulous listeners out there who happens to maybe possibly know somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody who could, like, you know, hook some brothers up with something, you know, a little studio space, because we could do this in the living room. It's very cute in the living room, you know.
A couple of gay brothers up. Speaking of, before we get out of here, before I want you to remind folks where they can hear your Broadway interviews.
If you're currently watching the boards of what I've got popping at Keith Price's Curtain Call, I have actually four interviews that are posted right now from my experience this past week at the Feinstein's 54 Below press up fronts. But in that mix, I got to talk to Chita Rivera and B.B. Newworth. And so I was able to not only get those interviews up and posted in a very quick amount of time, which is a lot of work for me to do with everything else I'm trying to get accomplished. But I also just got the blurb put up today on BroadwayWorld.com, so it's now one of part of the featured podcasts for BroadwayWorld.com.
Excellent.
And so that's really great. So it's Keith Price's Curtain Call, available Stitcher, Google Play Music, iTunes, Mixcloud, SoundCloud, and of course, one of the featured podcasts of BroadwayWorld.com.
There you go. We want to once again congratulate all the people that we loved who got Academy Awards, got the Oscars, like Allison Janney, Sam Rockwell, Guillermo del Toro, the Scare Bear, and that Jordan Peele. Oh,
do your thing.
So proud.
Do your thing.
Do your thing. And Jordan, call Paula Ferris.
With your next gig so she'll know. Because clearly she has no faith in you.
And Frances McDormand, ooh, girl, you rock it. Thank you for alerting us to inclusion and now, writers.
And now let's hope that all of these major stars that are out there now with their clout, their power, the Wills and Grace, the Will Smiths and the Jada Pinkett Smiths. Look at what you could do now for your sets. Do you want to make sure some folks of color are behind and in front of that camera? I'm just saying, so that you don't have to sit up in front of your tower next year mad at something else that didn't get nominated. Just saying.
And let me say this in closing out, that from now on, whenever you hear the phrase, took a dookie, you think of George Stephanopoulos.
Saying
on
Dookie
Good Morning America.
Saying Dookie on national TV. I'm sure every black person's face just dropped. Did he just drop?
Because it was early in the morning, and you know, people just dropped their boxes of Albert's grits, turned to the TV, and went, "Oh Lord, no, he didn't just take me there."
It's like sometimes this is when you're supposed to ask your black friends, is it okay if I say that?
But you do it off camera.
It off camera. Get a feel for it. Don't just throw that out there. We better get out of here. We've been out here way too long.
I need a cocktail now. Thank you for listening to Mocha, man of a certain UNH. We love you for listening. Talk at you later.
Oh, ciao.
Mocha.